Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, good morning to you. Happy Wednesday. Brought to you by Metro Rooter. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. Everyone's like, Tony Smith.
Hey!
I don't know who that is.
That's
who is
me.
That guy?
A new guy.
Welcome in.
Show.
By the way, did you notice the Ravens have like the most nondescript wide receiver core in terms of names? They have like Smith, Jones, Smith, and Brown. Those are the guys. I was
Smith
thinking about
Senior.
That this weekend. Smith Senior.
That's right.
He's not Tory's dad, but he's somebody's dad. I guess Smith Jr.'s dad would be the case. Happy Wednesday to you. Got a lot to get into today on Jaguars Today. We definitely want to talk some draft today for the first time, really setting aside a portion of the program to do that. And we'll take your calls on that coming up in about 15 minutes. 641-1010, the number as always. You can also get in on the bevy of news yesterday on potential offensive coordinator candidates. Two names that we've been talking about, but a little more clarity and confirmation that the Jags have actual interest in Mark Trestman, the former head coach of Chicago, Greg Roman, I guess still technically the offensive coordinator in San Francisco, right? He's still technically their guy. Isn't that correct?
I think so. I'm not sure exactly.
I think it's one of those deals, Tony, where they're going to let him, if he wants to take a job somewhere else, that's understandable. Because the new coach may opt to keep guys on the staff. I think that's what you want to let the new coach make that decision. That's why I think he's still.
Which is why it's kind of yes and no. I mean, in all likelihood, he's probably out as the offensive coordinator in San Francisco.
Still, I think you could still hand a business card out today if you're Greg Roman saying San Francisco 49er offensive coordinator.
Sure.
And that would technically be accurate. Kirby Wilson, welcome to the fray as well. And it's being reported the Jags will interview Kirby Wilson, the Minnesota Vikings' current running backs coach. Long tenure in Pittsburgh. And a lot of people thought he would succeed Bruce Arians a couple of years ago. Tony, remember he had there was a fire at his house, and he suffered some significant burns to 40-45% of his body, second and third degree burns, and basically wasn't physically able to handle the day-to-day rigors of the job. Needed to just rehab himself, but he's back now, well thought of in the National Football League, and so the Jags are going to knock on his door and kick the tires, so to speak, on him as well. We'll get to all those guys coming up momentarily. I don't think this has an iota of bearing on what the Jags would do with their pick, but it could have an impact on whether or not the Jags are able to find a potential trading partner in the draft. As you heard the guys at the end of the drill, Jeff and Dan talking about this, Jameis Winston's father apparently has told a reporter, David Hale with Seminole Nation, that's the Florida State site that ESPN has, right? Yep. They have all the different ones out there for all the different schools, that Jameis will declare for the NFL draft. I don't dispute the report. I don't dispute he said it. I don't dispute he's going to declare for the NFL draft. The only thing that's curious to me is, why would you say yesterday, his father said yesterday, that to a reporter that he's going to wait until after the national championship game to announce his decision and then go tell a reporter the next day what that decision is?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't get that.
Did Hale call and be like, all right, I get it. You want to wait till Monday night, whatever.
But just tell me.
Tell me now. You can just let me know.
Right.
Give me the heads
up. I don't know.
Up.
Maybe, I mean.
So I can write my article already.
You don't think you can tell that to a guy, a reporter.
To my editor on Monday night at midnight.
Is that it? Is he trying to trick him into that? I don't know if that's the case, but I think it's good for the Jags to have Jameis Winston in the draft.
I do
certainly
too.
I mean, because it potentially gives the Bucks a guy to think about at the top. Either way, you're going to have perhaps one of those two quarterbacks fall to the third spot, where if there is a market, if the Jets at six want to jump up and get a guy, not necessarily going to be the case, but you're going to be the team that they'll have to deal with if he slides to three. Now, if Tennessee gets a deal done and quarterbacks go 1-2, that's not the end of the world either.
No.
You're not going to take one at three, so you have your pick of every position player in the draft.
Yeah, you'll get your favorite player in this draft. If quarterback goes 1-2, you'll get your favorite player in the draft at three.
That's not a bad thing.
Right, if you're the Jags. But
at least have the opportunity to if you opt not to trade back.
Right, and you know, we're asking people today what direction they think the Jags are looking at, basically with that first pick in the first round. We're going to talk to Russ Landy a little bit later on in the show as well, about an hour away from talking to him. And look, the idea right now seems to be defensive line, and it makes a lot of sense. Leonard Williams is the guy that everyone's talking about. I said this a couple days ago, and it feels this way right now within just the scout circles that, of the people who talk about the NFL draft, that he's the best prospect in the draft. And I said it a couple days ago, I don't think the best prospect in the draft winds up at three. I don't think that's what winds up happening in an NFL draft. I don't know if it's because Tampa Bay takes Mariota, and that's the guy that Tennessee wanted if they were going to get a quarterback. So they say, well, we're not going to get a quarterback. They can't get any traction on a trade partner there, so they take Leonard Williams. Or somebody moves up because they feel like the Jags will be targeting Leonard Williams, which there will be a lot of people who think the Jags will be looking at Leonard Williams. So if you're another team in the top 10 who wants to get that impact player on the defensive line, that big size guy, Williams is that guy. And the two potential trade pieces right now in the top of the draft are Winston, because he'll be the other quarterback, or if Tampa decided they wanted Winston over Mariota, but whoever the other quarterback is, and Leonard Williams. I mean, those are the two guys that it feels like people are going to move for right now, which puts Tennessee in a prime spot, because both of those players are going to be available.
Right.
Whoever
the second quarterback is. A prime spot in terms of trading,
right,
or whatnot. But look, and in the end, I think everyone would love to see the Jags trade back a few spots and get the player of choice anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the ideal thing. It's not so bad to have your choice of any player that you would have considered drafting, because they're not, in my opinion, they're not going to consider drafting a quarterback. And if you think that's wrong, well, you can certainly tell us about that today. We'll take your calls on it. Also take your tweets on it. The Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you this month by Foundation Professionals of Florida, asking you that as of today, what do you think in terms of what position the Jags will draft in the first round? We've already had a few people suggest safety and said that's after a trade back, a Landon Collins of Alabama, for instance, maybe their preferred player, and they think the Jags will move back somewhere in the top 10 and still grab him. That's fine. You can do any. If you want to say you think they're going to take Jameis Winston, say it. If you want to say you think they should take Marcus Mariota if he's there, say whatever you want.
Yeah.
We just want to get a sense of where you are today. More, we're asking you what you think the Jags actually will do, but if you just want to talk about what you would like to see them do, you're certainly welcome to do that. 641-1010, the number to get in on that. Tony, let's go through these offensive coordinator candidates here for a moment as well, and we'll be obviously talking about this story until it becomes finalized, and then we'll focus in on the one guy at the top. I looked at Greg Roman's numbers for the last 4 years in San Francisco, and I know Ryan O'Halloran ran some of the numbers in the Times Union about how his running game has been in the top 10 basically every year that he's been there.
8-4-3-4.
So in the top eight for the and 3 years in the top four. Outstanding production in the running game. But to me, I'm more concerned with the overall offense, okay? How much where do they rank in total yards? Where do they rank in scoring? Now, scoring can be skewed because typically if you just rank the scoring stats, it's going to include defensive touchdowns. Doesn't take into account, I mean, if your defense, which San Francisco has been very good, is creating turnovers, or you're getting big returns of special teams and you're playing on short fields, that all factors into it, you know? But regardless of that, are some raw data. Total yardage rankings for Greg Roman offenses in the 4 years he spent in San Francisco. Keep it in mind that before this year, with all the talk about the Dallas Cowboys, I think most people felt that San Francisco had the best offensive line in the game.
Yep.
When healthy. All right. If not, it's one of the top handful of offensive lines in the game. They had Alex Smith for the first year plus of Roman's tenure, transitioned to Kaepernick, obviously. They've had the likes of Anquan Boldin for a couple of years. They've had Crabtree in there. They all actually had some veterans on the team this year, like Stevie Johnson and Brandon Lloyd. On top of that, Vernon Davis at times has been a Pro Bowl tight end. And you've got Frank Gore, now Carlos Hyde in the backfield. So you're not completely, the cupboard's not bare in terms of players. They've ranked 2011 through 2014, starting in the first year, 26th in total yards, but 11th in scoring. Then they were 11th in total yards, looking like they were moving in the right direction. That was the first year the transition to Kaepernick took place, and they went to the Super Bowl that year,
mm-hmm.
11th in each category. The next year, they fell to 24th in total offense, total yardage, and remained at 11th in scoring, which obviously scoring is more important, but again, it can factor in a lot of different things. And then this year, they improved a little bit to 20th in yardage, but fell all the way to 25th in scoring. So when you look at the raw data in terms of total offense, not all that impressive. Granted, they're a run-first team, and they did well at what their primary objective was. But a lot of people, I know fans, are thinking, let's get a guy in here who's going to open things up. We need to put points on the board. And the Jags threw the ball a ton last year. I don't know how much more you could open up. And Greg Roman coming in, I think, I don't know if that opens up anything. I think you may become a more conservative offense, ultimately. Maybe a more effective one.
Yeah, and he's a guy that, you know, Harbaugh brought him with him from Stanford when he made the transition to the NFL to be his offensive coordinator and was basically running the kind of offense that Harbaugh wanted to have run. And with the defense that they could play in San Francisco, you can understand him saying, look, just don't put us in bad positions defensively with what you're going to do on the offensive side of the ball. Now, it's the only experience he's had in the NFL at that kind of level, being an offensive coordinator. And I think for a team like Jacksonville, and that's really the discussion when you look at the three names that we're talking about today with Greg Roman, Kirby Wilson, and Mark Trestman, which of those three guys do I trust the most to develop Blake Bortles inside an NFL offense? And the answer to me for that is Mark Trestman. And it's a pretty easy answer for me. Now, that's not to say that I don't think Roman or Wilson could do it, but I've seen Mark Trestman go four or five different spots in this league and watch his quarterback, Scott Mitchell, and just different guys have career years when he's given the opportunity to coach them one time. He is the quarterback guru right now of these three.
His first year in Chicago, they were eighth in total yards, second in the league in scoring to only the Denver Broncos last year. Denver scored a ridiculous, they scored over 600 points last year. Nobody scored over 500 this year.
Right.
That's how good that offense was. But Chicago was top 10 in yardage, second in scoring. Now this year, if you look and you base it on this season, you say, what the hell happened? Well, I think part of it is the offensive line. Part of it is Jay Cutler. And Trestman's got to take some of the responsibility for it. If you were just basing it on this year, you'd say, oh, 21st in yardage, 23rd in scoring. There's nothing special there.
No.
But I think you're right. If you look at the full body of work for Mark
Trestman,
it
feels like there was some chaos in that locker room, too. And it came to the forefront at the end of the year, but there was a lot of expectation with what they were going to be able to do on offense. When they hit any kind of bog, it felt like, I mean, they have their offensive coordinator talking to the media about Jay Cutler and his contract and all these different things. But if you look at the track record of Trestman, the thing that I question with him is he's never long for anywhere. You know, he's a guy who's had a lot of success in places, and then he's out the door. He goes to Detroit for 1 year, and Scott Mitchell has the year of his life, and then he's gone. You know, he goes to San Francisco, and they lead the league in offense that year with Steve Young, and then he's gone. He goes to Oakland for 2 years. They go to a Super Bowl. That's the year that Gannon had his revitalization in his career, and then he's gone. And I don't know if it's because he butts heads with the wrong guy, or he's always looking for the next step up, or what the reason for that would be with a guy like Mark Trestman. But he has a lot of success in the places he goes, doing what he does, and then he's out the door.
How much does that bother you, though? Does that, to me, like, I don't look at this and say, this guy's got to be here for the next 10 years.
No, me either.
They got to win now, man. You know, Gus needs to win now. Gus doesn't have 10 years. He doesn't have 2 years. He's got to win games.
The question that it brings up to me is whether it's because he's always looking for the next step up or because his personality grates on people to the point where they can only stand having him around for a year or two.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
But if that's the case, but if he gets results and he seems to, then I'm okay with that. And maybe he rehabilitates his image and becomes a head coaching candidate again next year.
Sure.
Which, by the way, Greg Roman is a head coaching candidate right now. The Buffalo Bills are going to interview him, I believe, Friday for the head coaching spot. So it's not like the Jags are the only one interested. It's not just the Dave Caldwell college connection with Greg Roman. And we'll talk about that a little bit more as we go along today. You're certainly welcome to weigh in on that as well at 641-1010. But let's get into a little draft talk as well. What do you want to do, or what do you want to see the Jags do with their first pick in the draft? Whether that's trade back, or stand pat, maybe even move up. I doubt there's many of you in that category, but what position, as of today, you think is most likely that the Jags will spend that first round pick on? I've already had people tweet me and say, you're not going to get any argument from anybody. Everyone's going to say pass rush, and then the next three didn't say pass rush.
Right.
So say whatever you like. We'll talk about our thoughts on that. Russ Landy, the current director of scouting for the Montreal Alouettes and a former NFL scout as well, and a longtime draft evaluator, joins us about an hour from now, so stick around for that as well. You can tweet the show at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Tyler. Again, the fan feedback spotlight as of today. What position do you think the Jags will spend their first draft pick on in the 2015 NFL draft? Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Jaguars today just getting rolling. Your calls coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, here we go. Metro Rooter brings you Jaguars today every Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Going to get into the draft a little bit today. We're looking more at the details of the Jameis Winston declaring for the NFL story, according to his dad, Antoner. Antoner? I don't know. A-N-T-O-N-O-R. Antoner.
Whatever.
Sure. He said that he was going to wait to announce or to make a decision, but he came to a firm decision last night that he was ready to enter the NFL draft. So whether that turns out to be accurate, I assume it will be eventually accurate. I think he will go into the draft this year. Next Thursday is the deadline, by the way. Then the great debate will begin on those two guys. The great thing is,
let the great tearing down begin.
Oh yeah, although the people have tried to deify Marcus Mariota in the last month or so. He's kind of the anti Jameis, I guess, is their feeling off the field. And I don't think he's as equal as a pro prospect on the field. We'll see how the Bucs feel about that, because it's pretty clear. I don't think you proceed the way you did in week 17, where you're up 20-7 in the second half, and you pull all your starters, and you literally throw the game. I mean, they threw the game. And people ask, well, how players aren't going to throw a game? You can't throw a game. Well, the only way to do it is to put in your worst players.
Yeah.
You don't tell them to play poorly. You just let nature take its course, okay? You put in all your backups, you're going to lose in the National Football League. The margin is not that great. And plus the Bucs are a bad team to begin with. They happen to be up on a New Orleans team with nothing to play for in the final week of the season. But regardless, I think they're honing in. It'll be interesting to see, too. I mean, the Tressman thing with Lovie Smith. Tressman came in after Lovie got canned.
Yeah.
Josh McCown's a big advocate for him. There's photos circulating around the web of those guys dining in Tampa, hanging out, whatever. And he's obviously making a pitch. If I were Josh McCown, I'd want Mark Tressman in there, too. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, after the year he had in Chicago. And a quick note that it happened right as we were stepping aside there a couple minutes ago. The Jaguars have given permission to Chris Polian to go interview with the Philadelphia Eagles,
yes,
for their open GM job.
And good for him.
Yeah.
You know, if he gets it, I don't know if he will or not. But we'll see how that whole thing pans out with him. His dad, Bill, was sought after by the Buffalo Bills.
How much do you guys think that affects what they're going to do with the draft?
Nothing.
None.
Nothing?
No.
No. That's a Caldwell thing.
Yeah, I mean, he has his input. Dave Caldwell is
wasn't it fun talking to him about that whole process last year too, and that by this point last year he kind of knew Blake was the guy that's the direction he wanted to go at number three, and he didn't tell anybody in the building. He
right.
just let all his scouts go out, do their thing, came back, and they were all kind of like, you know, this Blake Bortles guy, you know,
right.
he's just sitting in that room smiling.
Wanted to see if they organically came to that same conclusion. And according to Caldwell, they did.
Yeah.
For the most part, unanimously feel like, wow, this is the guy. You wonder if he's got a guy like that this year. I don't know. I mean, who knows? I know everybody out there listening has a guy. We hear it all the time. All you tweeters have a guy. Okay. Maybe a different guy. A lot of Amari Cooper people out there. There were a lot of Todd Gurley people out there before the ACL.
Yes,
now there are a ton of Todd Gurley in the second round people out there, if he's available to the Jacksonville Jaguars. The comments by Dave Caldwell wrapping up the season seem to indicate that running back is not a high priority in terms of need in his eyes compared to a lot of other positions. that being the case, find it hard to believe then that they would go as high as a second round pick on a running back. I don't know if they feel like they're that piece away. The running back is kind of the last thing you want to add because their shelf life is so short,
mm-hmm.
and they can come in out of college. There's not a huge learning curve at running back. We see it with rookies every year. Hell, Trey Mason took, what, half a season coming from Auburn's funky offense to become the leading ball carrier in St. Louis. It's not that hard to transition. If you can run with the ball, it's more of an instinctive position. I'm not saying it doesn't take study and learning your opponent's habits and scheme and all that and understanding concepts. You got to have that on top of it. But you either got it or you don't at that position for the most part. I think that's been borne out. All right, let's get some calls in today. Where do you think the Jags are going with that first selection, whether it's a trade down and making a pick, whether it's standing pat? And also, where do you want to see them go as far as that goes? Let's start with Bill this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Bill. How are you?
Hey, good morning, good morning. And, Mike, you're so right. It's a passing league. All you got to do is look at New England. Who they got as a running back, right? And
yeah, it's a hodgepodge in New
right.
England. It has been for years.
But what I want to talk about is I've been a lifelong Philly fan. I've been living in Jack since 2008. So, one, I understand the pain of not winning a Super Bowl and being disappointed. But also, you're well aware of the moves that Philly has recently made from a player personnel, given all the reins to Kelly, and I stream their talk radio guys. And I'm telling you, if somehow Mariota could fall to 3 and the Jags could trade, Kelly's going to be all over his boy. That's his boy. That's who he believes he needs in Philly to run his offense the proper way. They got a lot of picks. They got a lot of players. And I think if somehow that guy could fall to 3, the Jags could hit a grand slam with making a trade with Philly, and I'll take you off here.
Well, yeah, honestly, if Philly's willing to trade up to 3, I'd be talking to Tampa if I'm Philadelphia, right? I mean, if you really are that convinced, and I'm, it makes sense. If you're going to run a system, Tony, like Chip Kelly's, you got to have the personnel that fits. You got to have a vision for what fits what they're doing. It's like Gus Bradley said. Now they need an offense coordinator who's cool with the zone blocking scheme because that's the personnel that they've acquired here.
Right.
Because and that makes sense. You don't trash 2 years of draft picks and free agent signings to completely overhaul. The Jags don't have that kind of time. They've been asking the fan base to wait for too long now. These are all part of the building blocks they hope of moving forward, but it would take a lot. It would take an awful lot.
To go from 20 to 3.
It would take a ton.
It would take an avalanche.
Right, and you know what? But if that presents itself, I wouldn't be opposed to it.
No.
I mean, let's say they draft Leonard Williams. Is he the difference between 6 and 10 wins? I don't know. I'm not saying he wouldn't be the best player for them to take, but could you get a pretty comparable something at 20? You know, is the guy, it's not like we're talking like Andrew Luck, who everyone said would be the next great quarterback, the highest graded quarterback since John Elway to enter the league in the whole 9 yards. I'd be open to it. And I think, look, Dave Caldwell's going to listen to anything. He'd have a value on what it would take, and he'll also have a list of, you know, where the tiers are in terms of players. Is
sure.
there 7 elite players in the draft, for instance? And do you want to stay in that top 7 to assure yourself of getting one? Or, you know, what is the likelihood you're going to get an instant impact player? I would say for this team, pretty likely, right? If you do your homework and you draft the guy who actually is the best player available at 20, walk in as a starter on this football team, I'd have a hard time believing he wouldn't.
Well, yeah, considering we all think that whoever they draft at 36 probably will be.
Exactly.
Two. So you would think the guy that's going to be drafted at 20 would be for this team. Now, look, it'll be a drop-off in tiers, but you're probably going to be getting a first-round pick from Philadelphia next year.
Right, you get a first-rounder next year plus
right.
probably a couple of other picks somewhere in
right.
the mix, especially coming up from 20. Buffalo, to move up from, what, 9 to 4 last year, went with their first rounder last year and a first and a fourth, I want to say, this year to get that deal done.
Yeah.
That's to move up from 9 to 4. That's 5 spots. We're talking 17 spots in the first round to a higher landing spot at number 3.
Yep.
It's going to take a ton to get up there. I don't think it's realistic, but I'd definitely be open to it.
Yeah.
And love to see that.
And we don't know how crazy Chip Kelly is. He might be nuts enough to try something.
Maybe
like
he is.
That,
maybe he feels like that's the piece. And you know what? I mean, for him, this could be the perfect confluence. I mean, this is the guy you coach in college to run this system, and he's been the best at running this system that we've seen at the collegiate level. A perfect fit for what you're trying to execute at the professional level. Maybe it is a situation where you say, you know what, for him, this is the Andrew Luck. This is the guy in my vision, if it's going to work with my offense here in Philadelphia, that's the guy we got to have. Tyler, tell me who's next, because for some reason I cannot get my
David's got a question about Jameis.
Let's talk to David then. Hello, David. How are you?
Hey, guys. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Good.
Hey, I had a question about Jameis. I think that when these guys start looking at film on him, they're going to see a guy that's very hard to get along with. I mean, I see him, you know, I've seen several games where he's going at it with Jimbo on the sidelines, and Jimbo's trying to say something to him, and he's, like, off looking in space somewhere. He doesn't even look Jimbo in the face. He doesn't have – I just don't see a guy that has respect for his coaches. And I'm wondering if he's going to drop out of the first round because of it.
Well, I mean, I think all those things are going to be heavily scrutinized with Jameis Winston. We talked yesterday, Tony, about not so much the fact that Jimbo yells at him, but the fact that he had to yell at him to calm the blank down because he couldn't handle what was happening around him. It's one of those situations where you're losing, you're going to lose. You just have to go out there and, you know, the old stiff upper lip.
Play out the string.
And play out the string and you know, for your fans, for your teammates, just do it. And he, I thought, had a very difficult time dealing with a scenario. He's just, always assumed, I can bring this team back from anything. And he always has.
Yeah.
How's he going to deal with going to a team if they go 4-12 in their first year? And everything's not perfect around him. I don't know. Now the yelling at Jimbo, I mean, I've watched for the last 2 years. I've seen plenty of interviews. And they say, this is how we communicate. They seem to get along. I get it. You can't do that with every coach. And maybe he wouldn't do that with every coach, but it's something that teams are going to nitpick at, but I don't think he falls out of the first round. I don't think there's any chance of that happening.
No, I don't think he falls out of the first round. And honestly, I don't think he falls out of the top 10, but I suppose he could based on just, look, the maturity questions that are going to be surrounding a guy like Jameis Winston are going to be immense. I just saw Todd McShay. Someone quoted a tweet from him. I think it was Joe Shad tweeted Todd McShay saying, look, no quarterback has ever won Super Bowls with the type of questions that we have about Jameis Winston coming into an NFL draft. Just the off-field maturity questions about the guy. No one's ever won at that kind of level with those kind of questions. And I do think that NFL teams pay attention to those kind of things. And we have Jeff Loggeman in here yesterday who said he wouldn't draft him. You know, he wouldn't draft him in the top 5, probably wouldn't draft him in the top 10. He thinks he's a draftable player, obviously, because he's a really good football player. But there are these other concerns. So if you're a team that needs a quarterback, you know, how long are you willing to wait on a guy like Jameis Winston? And I think the way that he handles himself, not only away from the field, but how he deals with a guy like Jimbo in that situation last Thursday, those are questions that teams are going to be asking when it comes to Jameis Winston, and because everything on the field is good. You know, he
for the most part.
Right.
I mean,
he feels more pro-ready than Mariota.
To me, he does.
You know, he seems to make the throws that Mariota doesn't. He throws to covered guys and throws them open. He throws to spaces sometimes instead of just throwing to an open guy. I mean, he does all these things. He seems able to read coverage. He's obviously got that instinct that you were just talking about to come back, to overcome adversity in the middle of games, but everything else, I mean, just how far is that going to knock him down? I mean, it's hard to say at this point.
I will say, on top, and I
especially
agree with
that. The third quarterback being who? Brett Hundley?
Brett Hundley, right, which, by the way, may be the steal of the draft,
right,
honestly, because, I mean, last year, Tony, he was talking about, would he go third overall? Would he be, you know, I mean, how high could Brett Hundley go? He was certainly worth a top 10 pick. And you're not going to have to spend that, it appears, to get Brett Hundley this year, although that's now. He could certainly, there's plenty of time for a quarterback like that to find himself in the top 10. The one thing I'll say, I do have questions about whether you want to bring in a guy who's shown that much immaturity as the face of your franchise.
Right.
Right? But this no quarterback has ever won a Super Bowl who fill in the blank, it's kind of a red herring of an argument to me, because how many quarterbacks have won Super Bowls? It's an incredibly small sample. No quarterback with the last name of Marino has ever won a Super Bowl. I'll go on, all right? And we go on and on and on. As far as that goes, there are plenty of categories of quarterbacks who've never won a Super Bowl. Granted, the maturity issue can be held against Jameis Winston, but that the way that's framed to me, I mean, they're, you know.
Well, it gets thrown into that intangibles thing that we've been talking about with Blake Bortles this entire time, and the way he handles everything, whether it be on or off field, the way that Blake is able to handle everything is like a professional. And is Jameis Winston going to be able to do that? And
that's a legitimate question.
Does he get in his own way of being successful at the next level if he can't handle any kind of failure at all?
I you know, it'll be fascinating to watch the Bucks. The Bucks were a franchise that for the better part of the 1990s would always use the local tie as the tiebreaker when they were drafting a guy. They loaded up on Seminoles, Hurricanes, and Gators down in Tampa. They didn't draft specifically for that, but they said if two guys were close enough, we would bring in the guy with local appeal. Think of the ones, guys like Warren Sapp and Derek Brooks and Warwick Dunn, and I'm sure Reed L. Anthony. We could probably go on and name a bunch more if we got out the rosters. Different times change. Does that play any aspect of it? I don't know if it does or not. They got to take the guy that they think can help them win the most, and you know, we'll find out. I think it's going to be one of those two guys, pretty clearly, assuming the reports are accurate about Jameis's dad saying that he in fact is declaring for the NFL draft. 641-1010, the phone number if you'd like to get on board. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. More Jaguars today straight ahead on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Metro Rooter brings you the show every Wednesday. Jaguars today here. Metro Rooter for all size plumbing jobs, residential, commercial, industrial, septic systems, restaurant, grease trap service. If it has to do with plumbing, Metro Rooter, your one-stop solution center. Same-day service, weekends included. The right people with the right equipment. Metro Rooter serving Jacksonville since 1978. Visit MetroRooter.com or call 695-1911. The next time you have plumbing issues, I'm in my own house. When I've got plumbing issues, couldn't give you a better endorsement than that. They're the people I call personally to get the job done, and they do. Our number here, 641-1010, if you'd like to get in today. Talking a little bit of draft coming up in about 30 minutes or so. Russ Landy will join us. He is the director of scouting for the Montreal Alouettes, former NFL scout and a longtime draft Nick kind of guy, right? The founder of GM Junior, which has been a long-standing draft Bible, so to speak. One of the ones that's been around for the longest period of time out there. Russell join us coming up at about 11:15. Just talk about some of the top prospects in the draft. You know, we're talking about, Tony, that Leonard Williams, Southern Cal, seems to be, among the non-quarterbacks, the kind of loose consensus best player out there, which happens to fit a position that a lot of people think the Jags would draft on the defensive line. Was scanning the web this morning, went over to the Sporting News website, and they've got a mock draft up that came out yesterday in which they declared Randy Gregory of Nebraska the star of the draft. Best defensive player in the draft. Now, there are different kinds of guys. We've talked about this. Williams is more of a space eater who can pass rush, right? He's more of a physical freak, quick on his feet, huge size. He's almost 300 pounds. He's just a bigger, sturdier guy, whereas Randy Gregory seems to fit almost the prototype of what you think the Leo pass rusher position calls for. He's about 6'5", in that 245 range.
Yeah.
Much like Deion Jordan was a couple of years ago. Where's Deion Jordan these days? I know where he is.
He's on punt coverage.
Is that what he's doing?
He does special teams down there.
He doesn't do much.
He blocked a punt. I remember one week he blocked a punt. I think that's the play he made this year.
Hey, you know what? It may turn out to be a superstar. And look, that's part of it too. Not everybody walks in as a superstar right away, but this team needs instant impact. And Gregory, to me, I didn't spend much time at all watching Nebraska or Southern Cal this year. So I'm not going to say I'm breaking these guys down, but I'm going on what the consensus scouting reports say about them. that Gregory needs a lot more work than Leonard Williams does.
Look, I didn't spend a whole lot of time watching USC and Nebraska this year either, but when I did watch any of their games, and this is, you know, I'm not watching to watch specific guys, they jump off the screen. I mean, they are guys that are talented enough that when you're watching, eventually you're going, who's that? You know, it's, and then you figure it out, oh, that's that Williams kid. Oh, that's that Gregory kid that everyone's talking about. And you do get that sense with those guys, which obviously is a good thing. I don't know which direction the Jags would tend to lean. I think it's harder to find guys that are 6'5", 290 that can do what Leonard Williams can do. I'm not saying that you don't want a guy that, if you feel like Randy Gregory is a guy that can be a double-digit sack guy for 6, 7, 8 years, that you don't need that too if you're the Jacksonville Jaguars. But finding guys who are 6'5 and 290 and can do what it looks like Leonard Williams may be able to do is so difficult. And to find somebody that you could groom in a spot where Red Bryant's playing it right now, who may potentially give you pass rush from that spot too, I think would be a big plus for this football team.
And I think the versatility.
Yeah.
As well. I mean, you can, there's so many different ways you can line up, in the lightning package, so to speak. And, you know, we hope for the best for Cindric Marks. We don't know what his rehab is going to be like. Knock on wood. I hope there's zero setbacks. I hope he has the quickest ACL rehab in the history of professional sports, which would be saying something. But, you know, you go into the off season where the position that I feel the best about on the team, the defensive tackle position, and I'm far from alone in that.
Mm-hmm.
Your lead two guys are both hurt. And now that doesn't mean that Roy Miller can't get over this, you know, meniscus stuff in short order. I mean, maybe everything's going to be fine with him. And maybe the same thing with Cindric Marks. That's kind of the thing in the National Football League, though. You have a position of strength. The reason you keep going there is the National Football League is a violent place, you know, and if you can continue to build on your strength, that's the thing, too. You take Gregory, let's say he does take half a season to really get up to speed or whatever. You're pretty good rushing the passer this year.
Yeah.
The question is, what will you be beyond 2015? Chris Clemens getting older, Red Bryant getting older. You know, Chris Clemens played the most snaps of any defensive lineman this year. So, you know, what is Andre Branch going to give you? Can he stay healthy
right
going forward? You know, long term, you feel good about the sack total. We've talked about it many times. There's not that one pass rusher. Although I do think Cindric Marks, second half of the season, I bet there were a few defensive coordinators that said, let's start here and let's take a look at this guy and what we're going to do because he was creating a lot of havoc. But you don't have that, clearly that J.J. Watt type guy. I don't know if either of these guys will ever come close to matching that kind of production.
No, you don't know. And Gregory's the guy that we were talking about first. I mean, when we were kind of whispering about what the Jags were going to do in the draft, Gregory's the name that came up before Leonard Williams did when we started talking about this 2 months ago. I did see CBS Sports put up a couple new mock drafts a couple days ago. Rob Rang, Dane Brugler over there. They both had Mariota Winston 1 and 2 to Tampa Bay and Tennessee. Brugler had Leonard Williams coming to Jacksonville. Rob Rang had Randy Gregory coming to Jacksonville with Leonard Williams on the board. So I think there are people out there who feel like the Jags may be leaning towards that Leo position. Obviously, we'll talk to Rob Rang sometime over the course of
Russ Landy can split the vote today, and we'll decide, and then we'll know.
The next couple of months, we'll know after today.
Yes.
After hearing about 30 minutes.
About 30 minutes.
We'll you will you. Know exactly what the Jags are going to do at number 3 in the draft. But I do think that's the direction that they're leaning. I think that in the end it's going to wind up being defensive line because of all the players that are going to be available to him there. That seems to be the position of strength at that point in the draft. I do think that's the direction the Jags are going.
All right, let's go to the phones and welcome John in next to Jaguars today. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Great.
Okay, I just have a question concerning Jason Pierre-Paul. I heard, I think, that he's an unrestricted free agent, and he's only making $3 million. Wouldn't it be better to try to get someone that's proven rather than go after one of these rush ends like Branch or someone who's not proven?
Well, that's a great point. I think that's a phenomenal. Look, if they can get JPP,
sign JPP, go, draft Williams.
Sign JPP and draft Williams because they play basically different positions on that line. Or even if they didn't draft a guy there. Let's say they just signed Jason Pierre-Paul, Tony, and then traded back 5 spots and got the best tackle on the board. and made him the bookend of Luke Joeckel on the right side. I'd be okay with that.
Me too.
You know, there are a lot of ways, and that's the thing. We sit here today, and we're trying to figure out with a roster that is what it is on January 7th, free agency can throw this whole thing a big monkey wrench. I'd love to get Jason Pierre-Paul here in Jacksonville. That would be a fun. I'd rather have him than Ndamukong Suh. I think Suh is a more consistently dominant player, but I think where he's going to play, he's going to eventually take reps away from where I think you're already the strongest. And plus, he's going to cost you probably twice as much as Jason Pierre-Paul. Maybe not twice as much. But he's going to probably cost you north of $20 million a year.
Probably.
For Ndamukong Suh. And then you get the inevitable, how many games will he be suspended for stepping on somebody? I'm not kidding you. You know, I mean, that's, to me, I'd factor it in. Some people like that. Some people would say they need more of that nastiness and bring him in here. But that's a great point, John. I mean, obviously, it's going to be impacted by what they do in free agency, but if they want me to start negotiating with Jason Pierre-Paul, I'd be happy to do it. I will be a very motivated emissary to bring him down to Jacksonville. Let's get Kevin up next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Kevin. How are you?
All right. How you guys doing? I heard you made a comment about the quarterback in Jameis Winston.
Jameis Winston.
Jameis Winston opposed to Blake Bortles and how Blake Bortles conducts himself on the field. But all that, you know, I'm just passing through. I'm a truck driver passing through. But, you know, nationally, looking at you guys, man, that don't equate to any wins. Now, this is my humble opinion. Blake Bortles and Jameis Winston, the way I've been looking at, I mean, I love Blake Bortles. And I wanted him to do well. So I just want to know, how are you guys seeing his progress, and are you pleased with Blake Bortles? Every time I see him, his footwork is this atrocious. In my opinion, I wouldn't put Blake Bortles and Jameis Winston in the same name vote. I think Jameis Winston, it should be a top five pick, and that's where the nation is standing. Can I get your comment on that, guy?
Well, sure. Blake Bortles was already a top five pick, by the way.
No, he was.
So,
I mean, and he was a top five pick that when he came in talked about, hey, I got a lot of stuff to work on, including my footwork, and that's part of why the team was saying, look, if he doesn't play this year, we'd be fine with it. They were so terrible on offense that they made the change to Blake Bortles, and so all those things that he was going to spend a year trying to work on, instead he was playing and didn't have a chance to work on him as much, so you saw a bunch of bad footwork at times on the field from Blake Bortles. You can fix that. That seems to be something that would be pretty easy to fix.
The comments in comparison between Jameis Winston and Blake Bortles were talking about how they would be a representative as the face of your franchise.
Yeah.
And in that category, Blake gets an A+. He's off the charts. Maybe Winston becomes that. I don't think he is that right now. I just don't. I mean, look at the track record. Now, as a player, it doesn't really matter what I think. I think Jameis Winston has the potential to be much better than Blake Bortles, just based on his performance in college last year. Now, he regressed this year for whatever reason. The interceptions skyrocketed. Now, some of that is he lost Kelvin Benjamin and he lost Kenny Shaw, but hey, you know, so you lost guys to the NFL. That happens all the time. They're getting the best recruiting classes in college football along with Alabama. They've got plenty of talent. The bottom line is, Tony, Dave Caldwell, after the draft last year, was asked specifically about this. Did you consider next year's draft class of quarterbacks, your potential class of quarterbacks, when making the selection? He said, look, of course, you got to look at the whole big picture. But he said, we believe if Blake Bortles came back for another year in college and entered the draft next year with everyone else who was eligible to come out, in other words, Mariota, Winston, Bryce Petty, you name the guy,
mm-hmm.
Blake Bortles would have been the top guy on their board. Now, you may disagree with that. I may disagree with that. It doesn't really matter. That's the GM stance. They're not, you know, I mean, we can have this exercise. Who's going to be better? I don't know. Is Winston going to keep his nose clean? Can you guarantee me that for the next 10 years? If he does, I think Winston will be better than Blake Bortles. That's my opinion. I don't know if he's going to do that. The risk factor that he's going to do something knuckleheaded, never mind the risk factor that he might get to the NFL in the game, you know, as much as he dominated in college, he can't do that at the NFL level. We see plenty of guys dominate in college who can't translate it to the NFL.
No, and that's the conversation right now with Jameis Winston, and that's what he's going to have to answer and face for the next 4 months. I mean, those are the questions he's going to get from teams when they sit down and talk to him. I think the film says everything you need to know about Jameis Winston as a player. I do think that he can do everything that you need an NFL quarterback to do. I don't know how I feel about him compared to Blake Bortles because I haven't seen Blake play with any kind of offensive line. You never saw it at UCF either. He wasn't surrounded by the talent that Jameis has been surrounded by either in that time. I like Blake Bortles. The caller asked how we felt about watching him this year. No, I'm not satisfied with what we saw from Blake.
To me, he didn't get better.
No, and you hope that an offseason helps him as much as it helps everybody else in this young offense grow up a little bit over the course of the offseason. I think that, and everyone keeps saying this, but I agree with the idea of everything else is so good with Blake. Those intangibles you talk about are so good with him that when the mechanical stuff gets worked out, which I think can get worked out with work, that he'll be great. I do think that he can be great in this league.
Let me just say as well, I say he didn't get better. He got better in certain aspects. He cut down his turnovers, for instance. All right, so I don't want to say he didn't get better at anything. But based on those first few games, the way he played against San Diego, or he threw for 336 against Tennessee pretty early on, the offense seemed to peter out. Now, he also lost Allen Robinson. He was dealing with a porous offensive line. I'm not saying Blake's I'm not saying any of that. But if you're asking, did I get what I wanted? I would have preferred for him to be throwing two touchdowns and 250 yards every week, win or lose.
If they were moderately good on offense, this team won 6 games.
Right.
If they were moderately good on offense, this team won 6 games. They went 3-13.
All right, we got to take a break. We'll come back to Dayton football history, the Honda drive around the NFL. Russ Landy coming up as well about 20 minutes from now, the head of scouting for the Montreal Alouettes and a former NFL scout as well. It's Jaguars today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
This date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, January 7th, 1962. Tony, the Western Division, the mighty West,
woo,
defeated the Eastern Division 47-27. It was the first AFL All-Star game played before. How big do you think the crowd was in San Diego that day?
8,552.
Wow, you underestimate. Nearly 21,000 are bursting at the seams in San Diego to see the AFL All-Star Game. The Chargers were like one of the darling teams of the AFL, weren't they?
They were.
I think they would turn out for that. Also, this date, 1 year earlier, the NFL played what they called the Playoff Bowl, which is basically like the runner-up game to the championship. So, hey, we just lost our chance to go to the NFL title game. Let's play each other. Detroit beat Cleveland 17-16 in that one. Sure, it was a thriller. And 1986, the Bears capped their Super Bowl season by defeating the New England Patriots. Final score for that one over the Patriots in Super Bowl, what was that, Super Bowl 20?
Was it like
XX?
41-3?
46-10. Mm-hmm. You're in the ballpark. That's when the NFC was running roughshod over the AFC. For the most part, really. All the way up until, I guess, Denver won back-to-back Super Bowls in the late 90s. This state in football history brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. If you're in the market for the Stop Snoring Mouth Guard Custom Fit, call 620-9225 for you or a loved one. If you just need a family dentist or cosmetic work done, the same number applies. 620-9225. Visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
The Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Well, the NFL apparently just can't leave it alone. The Cowboys beat the Detroit Lions, and Dallas is preparing for the trip to Green Bay this weekend in the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. The country has spent 2 days talking about the flag that was, and then it inexplicably wasn't, pass interference against the boys that would have given the Lions a first down there in the fourth quarter. The NFL VP of Officials, Dean Blandino, weighed in saying that maybe it was or maybe it wasn't interference, but there was definitely defensive holding on that particular play. Now, late last night, the NFL was admitting that they missed a blatant holding call on Ndamukong Suh on the Cowboys' fourth down conversion late in the game. Also, Matthew Stafford apparently talked to one official about the flag that was picked up. The official told him there was no contact. That clearly was not the case on that play. So, yeah, the officials were even worse in the game than you thought they were.
Yeah, there's no contact on the play. Why'd you pick it up? I mean, really, the whole Stafford thing, he was just going on and on about, well, he said, congratulations. He said it a couple times. First time in the history, you've made history. Never has that flag been picked up before in the history of the National Football
League. You can understand its frustration. Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers is dealing with a strained left calf that he is expected to have examined today. Rodgers, for his part, is not worried about the injury. He went on with ESPN Milwaukee Radio yesterday and said, quote, it feels better. We'll see what happens this week as far as practice reps. Everybody's so concerned about him. I'm not, and thankfully my teammates aren't either. Rodgers was knocked out of the Packers Week 17 game against Detroit when he aggravated the injury but did return later to that football game. Everyone expects him to be a go against Dallas this coming up weekend.
There you go. That is the Honda Drive around the NFL. 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board. Let me ask you this. If they didn't go defensive line, and I think you're right, it's extremely likely. But there are, you know, everyone thinks they know today. Like, one tweeter is sending me tweets, the top tackle in the draft is a guard. Well, that's who some people think is a top tackle. And my snarky reply was, Andres Pete is a guard? I didn't realize that. Because you go to the Sporting News, they're going to rank Andres Pete ahead of Scherf, the guy out of Iowa, who some people think is a guard. But which, by the way, if he ends up being considered a guard, he's the top, maybe the top tackle on January 7th. You must not have watched many draft seasons, okay? Because those guys fluctuate significantly.
Sure
my
do.
Point is, I'm not suggesting the Jags target an offensive tackle high. I'm just saying, if you go out and sign Jason Pierre-Paul, I think all of a sudden your options become a lot more multiple. Let's say then that Leonard Williams goes to the Tennessee Titans at number two. Who are you taking then at three, Tony? If let's say you did sign Jason Pierre-Paul, who are you taking? You taking Randy Gregory? You just sign that guy.
Sure.
In Jason Pierre-Paul, or are you going to play him? You're not going to flip him to the other side. I mean, the way this defense is run, you're not typically going to have two of those guys on in base packages, two of that type of pass rusher on the field in this offense.
Honestly, if I were the Jags and I got put in that position, it depends on how much I like Randy Gregory or any of those other Leo potential guys. And if I couldn't get out of the spot, that's when I would consider Amari Cooper.
Amari Cooper, yeah. Right. I mean, the point being, you know, we can all sit here and say, we know they're going to take this, and you might end up being right, but you can't know. You just can't because you don't know what's going to happen in free agency.
Right.
Your opinion is certainly welcome.
Yeah, if you were going to tell me right now that the Jaguars could sign Jason Pierre-Paul and draft Leonard Williams, I'll take
Done.
It.
Done. Right, I'm with you on that.
Stamp it, baby.
I got no problem with that. We just don't know. As we said, will Leonard Williams even be available for the Jacksonville Jaguars
at 2? I don't think he's going to get
three. If he is as good as everybody says he is, and I'll be fascinated. Russ Landy's going to join us in about 8 minutes. Matter of fact, we'll break here in a second, and we'll come back with Russ Landy. He's the current director of scouting for the Montreal Alouettes. He's been an NFL scout. He's been an online draft scout for a number of outlets, including the Sporting News, for years and years and years, and is the author of the GM Junior Draft Guide. He's as well-respected in that kind of community. As you can see, I mean, he's got a job in professional football. Yes, it's Canadian football. You don't think they're evaluating the same players? They certainly are. Certainly a lot of the same guys. They may not be spending a whole lot of time on the tip-top guys because they know they're not coming north of the border. But regardless, we'll get his opinion on guys such as Leonard Williams and Randy Gregory. I'm just interested to know what he thinks about the quarterback battle as well. Even though it doesn't directly impact the Jags as to who they may take, it may impact their potential trade market or if, you know, is Winston going to be too much for the Titans to pass up, or is some team going to give them an offer that they can't pass up? I mean, because Leonard Williams may be good, Tony. I don't know if I'm the Tennessee Titans if I can pass up an offer to move down to 6 for a couple of firsts, a second, and a fourth, you know?
Yeah, and I already saw the story today that Washington is apparently going to be interested in Jameis Winston as well.
You damn sure hope so if you're the Jags.
Yeah, and they're 5. I mean, Washington's picking 5th.
And that's almost perfect, because you almost have to have that scenario, because if the Jets feel like Washington is not going to be interested, now that could be, keep in mind, it's January, that info gets out, Washington has no interest in having that info out there. If it's accurate, that could be just, hey, Jets, go on, trade up, let's make sure Jameis Winston, let's make sure both quarterbacks come off the board before the 5th pick in the draft, because we really like 3 other guys.
Yeah. You don't really know anything. I mean, we've spent an entire offseason 1 year talking about Reggie Bush going to Houston with the number 1 overall pick, and then 2 weeks before the draft, there were the whispers that Mario Williams could actually be the guy for that spot. And a lot of people were very surprised when Houston pulled the trigger on Mario Williams instead of Reggie Bush. But we spent an entire offseason saying, well, when Reggie goes number one, how's it going to fall after that? And then you got to the week of the draft, and it was like, oh, maybe it's not going to work out
right
that way. So you don't know, especially in January, you don't know.
And you might end up being right.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you knew. The one you kind of knew was Andrew Luck. Right?
Oh yeah, you knew for 2 years.
Right. And that's the thing. That there, sometimes you do. Sometimes there's the consensus. And you know what? It may go Mariota, Winston, Jags had their pick and they take Leonard. It may go textbook like some of the mock drafts are doing right
Sweet.
Now. But in the between now and then, it could change 50 times.
Yep.
And that's the beauty of it. Russ Landy on the other side, Metro Rooter Wednesday. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, tell me what you just said, Tony, to me a moment ago as we were coming back from the break. Talking about Jason Pierre-Paul.
Yeah, I was looking at Jason Pierre-Paul's, you know, first 5 years in the league. He's got 42 career sacks.
Okay.
If he had that five-year period in Jacksonville with 42 career sacks, he'd be second on the Jaguars' all-time
list. All-time
yeah.
sack.
Wow.
That's a low bar there, Mr. Tyler.
Joel Schmingi, number two with 34 sacks.
Attaboy, Joel. Way to hold on to that spot.
Or should I say Schmingi?
Hang on till your fingers bleed, baby. Let's welcome in Russ Landy. Russ is a good dude, man. He is one of my favorite people to talk to this time of the year. He's been in the draft business for a long time, former NFL scout, currently college scouting director for the Montreal Alouettes, and, of course, GM Jr. is a staple in the drafting and scouting community as one of the Bibles of, you know, where you go to look for prospect analysis and rankings and the like. And he joins us once again on 1010XL on the Garber Auto Mall Hotline. Russ, how are you? Happy New Year.
Thanks for having me on. I am doing great. How are you guys?
We're fantastic, man. We're, you know, we've been patient this year, Russ. I think here in Jacksonville last year, it was about week six when we started getting heavy into the draft. You know, just you knew it was going nowhere. There was no franchise quarterback. Before we get into this year's draft class, take me back to last year. What did you think of Blake Bortles as a pro prospect? And after seeing him in his rookie year with all the circumstances that go into it, how do you feel about him going forward?
You know, looking back, I was clearly low on him. I mean, I thought he was the guy that in that second round would be a good player to select, but I thought he had a long road in terms of working on his footwork and his fundamentals to become a more accurate thrower. I was really impressed with him this year. I think the thing that stands out more than anything else is that for a young kid being thrown into a team whose offense is still sort of building, it's in its infancy, he showed remarkable poise to me. I think this is a kid that showed that the game is not too big for him. I think he's got a very bright future, and the Jaguars have to be excited that at least off what you saw this year, it looks like they found their quarterback. So, and that's the hardest thing to find. Everything else, you can find guys, you can sign guys. Finding that quarterback is so difficult. So I think the arrow is definitely pointing up on both Bortles and the Jaguars.
Russ Landy joining us here. And look, Russ, when you talk about Blake Bortles there, obviously the conversation about the quarterbacks this year, the top two in a lot of mock drafts, both going with quarterback in Tampa Bay and Tennessee, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota. How do you feel, before we get into your specifics on those players, how do you feel about those guys against what you thought about Blake?
Well, you know, probably looking back, I would have thought that Blake was slightly better than both coming out. Now, I don't think there's any question he's a better prospect than both those guys. I mean, to me, both of these guys, Mariota and Winston, who will be top five to top ten picks in the worst case scenario, both have major question marks surrounding them. And that, to me, is the reason, at least with Bortles, a lot of it is based on technique and fundamentals. When I look at Mariota, I just look at the history of every quarterback that played that offense in college. Robert Griffin, Colin Kaepernick, Alex Smith, and I'm trying to find one that's really become a good, consistent NFL starter that you want running your franchise. And maybe Alex Smith, after 10 years in the league, has become that guy. And with Winston, a lot of people point to the off-field stuff, but my concern is when I watch the film is this guy makes an inordinate amount of mistakes. He has a very high error ratio when I chart these guys out, higher than pretty much any quarterback I've ever evaluated. And to me, that doesn't go well in today's NFL. If you throw 16 to 20 interceptions every year, you're not going to be a starting quarterback for long. So I have real reservations about both Mariota and Winston, and therefore, to me, Bortles is head and shoulders above both.
All How about that? Jag fans going to love to hear that, which is exactly, and we haven't talked to you about this, Russ, so we didn't know what you were going to say. At least we hadn't talked to you about this in a while. It's exactly what Dave Caldwell said after last year's draft. He said, did you take next year into account? He said, look, we felt in studying these guys that if Blake had returned to UCF for another year, there's no question he'd be our top prospect at the quarterback position versus anybody. You're echoing that. But when you look at these guys this year, everyone says that Mariota and Winston probably both top five locks. Certainly Mariota expected to be. Compare them head to head. If you're the Bucs, which guy are you pulling the trigger on with what we know right now?
Well, you know, I mean, it really comes down to, are you betting on who can develop into a better quarterback, or are you betting on who is going to do the work off the field to handle being a successful pro? Because Mariota physically is a special guy. He's got a big arm, very accurate thrower, tremendous athlete, but he's never played a traditional offense. He looks lost at times when he's in the pocket, having to do NFL-style things like moving within the pocket, identifying second and third receivers. And then you have Winston, who he's played a pro offense. He knows what he's got to do. He's got the arm. He's got the release, but he makes a ton of mistakes. And then you add in the immaturity and poor decision-making. If I were to bet on one, I'd probably go with Mariota if I were the Bucs, just because in the NFL, to be a successful quarterback, you not only have to be gifted, but you have to be the hardest working guy in your building. And we don't know if Winston's going to do that because we don't know what the off-field situation is going to be for him. I would be nervous to take either one with the first pick.
How much does what you just mentioned there off-field affect how you evaluate these two players in Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota?
Well, I think one of the misnomers is that people in the NFL will lower a grade on a player when they evaluate them off film, and that's not how it works. The scouts are always told, grade the player, then give me the information on the character. And when we sit down with the GMs and the head coaches, they will decide if the talent is worth dealing with the character. So he has immense talent. No doubt, if you can improve a lot of things he does poorly, Winston has frontline talent. But to me, if you look at the history of the NFL, there are not many quarterbacks who succeeded who had major off-field issues coming into the NFL. The only one I can think of recently is probably Cam Newton, and his stuff was 2 years removed from when he came out of college. His stuff was back in his freshman year of college, not months before he became an NFL prospect. So I think there's a huge risk of a guy like Winston failing because of how much it takes off the field in terms of leadership, work ethic, character to be the face of a franchise.
Russ Landy here with us, the college scouting director for the Montreal Alouettes and an extensive resume in the scouting business. Russ, let's move past these QBs. The Jags are not taking one at three. We know that, although we hope there's a market, a trade-up market, whether it's in front of them that assures them of having their choice of anyone not a quarterback in this draft, or if they can get some value trading back a few spots. But let's say they are in that position, Russ, and they're sitting there with the third pick, and it's Mariota Winston, the first two picks, boom, boom, doesn't matter who's taking them. Leonard Williams, Randy Gregory, somebody else, who is the obvious, if there is one, choice for the Jags at three?
Well, you know, I think you nailed two of the three guys. I think Leonard Williams, if the Jags, considering Sandarek Marks' injury, not knowing if Tyson Alualu is going to be back, I mean, he's a young, powerful defensive lineman. I think he's the best to come into the league since Ndamukong Suh. So, I mean, he would make a lot of sense. He would upgrade what I think is already a very good young defense and make it even better. Randy Gregory would be another guy. I mean, when you look at Chris Clemens, I mean, you talk about a guy that has had a very good career, but it's obviously just like Red Ryan, who they brought in from the Seahawks, both those guys are on the back end of their career. And Randy Gregory could learn a ton from Clemens and is an impact, explosive edge pass rusher. The one name that I think is very interesting is just looking back a few years when they had Eugene Monroe at left tackle and they took Luke Jokel, is now they have Luke Jokel at left tackle and that offensive line is still somewhat question mark. Is a kid named Andres Pete out of Stanford. He may not be the sexy pick, but I just look at the future and say, you know, you want Blake Bortles upright. You don't want him taking hits. And if you took Andres Pete and made him your right tackle, and you had he and Jokel there, and then you add in Brandon Linder and the Bowanko kid at center, who I think really surprised a lot of people with his play this year, I think you might have the building of a very strong and powerful offensive line. So that's just sort of, to me, a guy that you have to really consider is Andres Pete, because he would be able to step in very quickly and play right tackle and really upgrade that offensive line quickly.
Yeah, I just want to say for the record, again, Russ, we have not discussed any of these players with Russ prior to this. We were just talking about Andres Pete a minute ago, and just more talking about, you know, the different scenarios that the Jags were to trade down. I don't think they're going to sit there at three and have their choice of those linemen, those defensive linemen, Russ, and go offensive line. But it was more, he was a name we threw out there as a possibility. I just wanted to make sure people knew we didn't get together and know what was coming out of your mouth in the next instant.
No, definitely not. And I will say there's one other name to throw in there that deserves consideration as a prospect that I think because of the Jaguars' issues with Justin Blackman, they wouldn't go down that road. But Darrell Green Beckham, the Missouri receiver who got kicked out of school, there are some scouts that feel he's the best player in the entire draft and a guy that's the best receiver since Calvin Johnson to come out. So a team like Jacksonville, who is still developing young guys like Robinson and Marquise Lee, might have an interest, but I don't know if after everything with Blackman, they'd be willing to even consider going down that road again with a receiver with off-field problems coming into the league.
There are so many places I can go from here.
My goodness, right? Dorial Green Beckham just got thrown in the mix.
Going back to the defensive linemen, outside, it sounds like you don't love either one of the quarterback prospects. Who is your favorite player in this draft?
You know, right now I'd probably have to put Leonard Williams as the guy. I think when you look at him, is he the explosive guy like a Gerald McCoy? No, but I think beyond that one thing that he doesn't have that rare explosive first step, I think he's a quick guy. He's tremendously athletic with the speed to chase down the ball. He's a powerful guy at the point of attack. He disengages and makes plays behind the line of scrimmage against the run and pressuring the quarterback. I mean, to me, he's a guy who would step right in for Jacksonville. He would start. And all of a sudden, what is a good young defense might become a top five or top ten defense. Because if he's there, and when Sendarek is back healthy, I mean, you're talking about some young bucks. I mean, Sendarek's still a young player that can really impact the game. So I think he would be an outstanding player to add to them. And I just think he's the guy with the fewest holes, the fewest questions, which makes him the safest pick. And that's what Jacksonville needs. They need singles. They don't have to hit a home run with the pick. They just got to get good starters every pick that they make.
Yeah, they can't miss on too many. They need some instant impact guys, especially at the top here, Russ. And you mentioned Dorial Green Beckham. We speak here with Russ Landy. He's the college scouting director for the Montreal Alouettes. He's a physical specimen. We all know, as you talked about, he's got off the field issues and character concerns. You're the first person I've heard, though, seem to indicate that he is the top receiver in this draft. Down here, a lot of SEC fanfare. People are in love with Amari Cooper, and there's certainly a contingent of Jag fans that would like to see them go that way. Tell us your thoughts on Cooper. Where does he rank among the wide receivers, and how high is too high to take him in the draft?
I mean, Cooper's a very good player. He's a smooth, fluid guy, runs excellent routes, has good hands. He reminds me a lot of the kid that went to the Dolphins, actually, Jarvis Landry. I mean, he might be a little bit more quick twitch, but a very solid guy who's going to play a long time in the league, probably catch 60, 70 balls a year. I mean, I think later in the first round, he'd be a good value, top of the second round. But I think the difference is with Beckham, or Darrell Green Beckham, even though he is not obviously as polished off the field in terms of decision-making maturity, as a talent, he's bigger, stronger, faster, more dynamic, super competitive. I mean, he's everything you want in a number one elite franchise receiver. The concern really comes down to, can he put together the things that got him kicked out of Missouri, where they have a great program in terms of helping kids, teaching them how to mature, teaching them to make the right decisions. And the fact he couldn't do it there is a red flag. But talent-wise, he's a freak of nature. And that's what some team is going to do, is gamble on him early in the draft because he's so gifted.
And again, going back and looking at last year's crop of wide receiver and kind of comparing it to what we're seeing this year, Amari Cooper, you mentioned Dorial Green Beckham. Sammy Watkins was a guy that was being talked about a lot to the Jags there at number three. Mike Evans winds up being a top 10 pick, and Odell Beckham Jr. was outstanding for the last half of the season. But how do you compare the guys that are coming into this draft to that crop of wide receivers last year who had unprecedented success as rookies in the league?
No, I really think other than Green Beckham, none of them really are in that conversation with those three from last year. I mean, I think Beckham talent-wise is right there with all of those guys. If you were to put those guys in this year's draft, I don't think you'd see a receiver other than Beckham go in the first round. I think guys like Amari Cooper would be definite second rounders because they don't compare to players like the Beckham kid. I mean, Mike Evans is just a beast, and Darrell Green. I mean, he's not in that same caliber of player, but there aren't that many elite receivers this year, which is going to allow a guy like Amari Cooper to be a first round pick because there aren't guys like that crop from last year in the first round this year.
Russ Landy here with us for a couple more minutes talking NFL draft with you here on Jaguars Today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Russ, I don't know if it's likely or, you know, a small outside chance that the Jags may go running back later in the draft. When you compare the consensus top two guys right now, Melvin Gordon and Todd Gurley, in whatever order you like them, are they the best two running backs out there? You know, how much would the Gurley's ACL concern you? And, you know, just your thoughts on those two.
You know, I mean, they're definitely elite guys. I'm not a doctor, so I can't tell you in terms of the stability of his knee or what the long-term prognosis is. That's something I would leave with my medical people. If they said he's clear, he's going to be the guy that he was before the injury, then I would have no hesitation taking him. So like the Ravens did with Jamal Lewis about 15 years ago, and he turned out to be a star player. Gordon is a dynamic, explosive football player. I think when you watch this kid play, he can change games in a heartbeat. I just don't know if Jacksonville's going to go that way in the first round. I think a guy to keep an eye on that I think the Jacksonville would fit very well with sort of Gus Bradley's tough guy, physical runner type, is a kid named David Cobb out of Minnesota. Not going to be a high guy in the first round or anything, but maybe in that second or third round, probably third round for where the Jaguars are picking. He's a great inside runner, punishing guy who breaks tackles. Very good hands out of the backfield, high character, good in pass protection. He's just not a rare explosive athlete. But I think if you want that grinded out type guy who's going to get you the tough yards, he's a guy that can do that. And I think he fits perfectly with sort of that tough guy, all out competitor mantra that the Jaguars are sort of building there within their franchise.
And just to be clear, I wasn't suggesting, I may have been confusing you, but that the Jags would draft one that high. I was thinking more top of the second round if they were going to go after one of those guys that they were available. So I just wanted to make sure people understood I wasn't suggesting the third overall pick would go that way.
No, the Jags certainly not going running back with the third overall pick. Look, Russ, when you look at some of the other defensive linemen, we talked about Leonard Williams a lot. Randy Gregory kind of being thrown in the mix with guys like Shane Ray, Dante Fowler, even out of the University of Florida. Gregory seems to be the guy that is at the top of that list. Do you agree?
You know, I think that you're talking about two very different people. Gregory is the best athlete, without question, of all the defensive ends in this draft. He's a rare special athlete. The guy that you're talking about, you don't see guys who can change directions like he does, like explode to the quarterback. When you look at Shane Ray, he's a good athlete, but he's a more powerful guy. And Gregory competes harder every snap, plays with sort of that hair on fire sort of style that he never quits. I think Gregory's more gifted, but if you gave me the pick, I'd probably lean towards Ray just because players with his ferociousness and style often succeed more than the guys who are a little bit more gifted physically but don't have that sort of wild dog mentality on the field that Ray does. He plays with such emotion and energy. That's what you need and you want on your defense.
Russ, obviously we spend a lot of time looking at the top because it's easy to project. There are only so many guys that can go before the Jags pick. It's easy to narrow down. They're going to have their choice of one of these fellows here. But overall, top to bottom, where is this draft the strongest? Where is it the weakest?
You know, and it's good for the Jaguars. The offensive line and defensive line are very strong in this draft. I mean, if the Jags felt that there was one player at a different position that they had to address early, whether it was a receiver or a corner, whatever that position may be. In the second and third round, there are good tackles that will be available. There are good pass rushers that will be available. So because of that, I think the Jags are in a great spot that two positions they, I think, want to continue to build upon have a lot of depth in this draft, as opposed to, I think, there are certain positions where you look at them, safety, corner, there's not middle linebacker, there's not a lot of guys there that get you really excited. So it may be where if there's one guy, the Jaguars might take him earlier and be at one of those weaker positions to make sure they get him. And then in the second or third round, address a position that has a lot more depth in this year's draft.
Russ, from a team-building perspective, a lot of the conversation this year about how young this Jaguars team was on the offensive side of the ball. Does that come into your thinking at all when you're a team like Jacksonville and you're going for that third pick? You mentioned maybe somebody on the offensive line, maybe wide receiver. Do you want to get younger on the offensive side of the ball? Is that a strong consideration for you?
Well, I mean, you always have to take it into consideration. And remember, the draft, you can't get older in the draft. I mean, there's no way to do that. These guys are younger players you're drafting. So I think what both David Caldwell and Gus Bradley understand is if they draft an Andres Pete, obviously it's a younger guy. But that doesn't mean you can't sign, and I don't mean the big money free agents, but one or two veteran linemen and bring them in. And maybe they're not starters. Maybe they compete to be starters, but they come in and they're part of the meeting room. They're out there in games, part of what's going on. They don't have to be starters to influence the team as older players and leaders. So you can address the older player issue and bringing in some experience by going after mid-level free agents, not breaking the bank, not that going and getting an Ndamukong Suh is going to hurt, but you can get some good veteran guys that come in and help bring experience to your team, even if you draft an Andres Pete in the first round and put him on the offensive line.
And let me ask you this, Russ, as we wrap up. We appreciate your time today, and hopefully we can catch up with you frequently between now and the actual NFL draft. Tell us about Daron Carter, who obviously Chris Carter's son, played for you guys up in Montreal this past season, did extremely well, big guy, had some off-field concerns as well. That's why he went undrafted last year. What kind of an impact do you think he's going to make in the National Football League?
You know, I think Daron has the talent to be a very good starting receiver in the NFL. He's a big kid. He's very smooth. He runs very good routes. He has outstanding ball skills. The one area I think he's sort of deficient is he has good speed, but he does not have special explosiveness or speed. When I look at what he can be in the NFL, I think he can be a 60 to 70 catch a year guy, 10 to 12 touchdowns, because in the red zone, he's special, and running after the catch, he's special. The thing that I think is overlooked with Daron is, yeah, are there maturity questions about what led to him not making it at three different schools and ending up in the CFL? I don't think there's any doubt. But this is a very intelligent kid. He's not a kid who doesn't understand football, who doesn't know what has to be done. I think it's just a matter of him growing up and maturing, and I think he's done that during his time with us. I think he's going to make an NFL team happy. But I do think this first year in the league, he is not going to make a big impact. I think he's going to be a growing experience for him in 2015 in the NFL. I would expect him to really start to make an impact 2016 and going forward, because he's going to still need to work on learning what it takes to be a professional at the NFL level, because that's very different than playing in the CFL where you're not up there year-round.
Gotcha. Russ, continued success up there north of the border, by the way. We always appreciate your opinions and insight. You've already stirred up a mini hornet's nest on Twitter with our local followers with some of your comments vis-a-vis Bortles versus the QBs in this year's draft, but that's fine. By the way, follow Russ on Twitter, at Russ Landy, R-U-S-S-L-A-N-D-E. Russ, happy new year once again. We'll look forward to doing it again sometime before the draft.
You got it, guys. Thanks as always, and anytime you need me, I'm happy to come on.
You're the man. There he goes, the director of college scouting for the Montreal Alouettes and former NFL scout and a longtime voice, one of the best. Tony, I have a string of tweets from people with some kind of seminal reference either in their Twitter name or their avatar that think Russ Landy is off his rocker. Perhaps a biased subset of Twitter followers.
Could be.
Could be. Then there are the other ones who don't have the affiliation with that. We're just a Jag fan saying, preach, Brother Russ. Preach about Blake Bortles, B. Jameis, and Marcus Mariota. I guess we'll find out in time. Dr. Stephen Lucy joins us. We'll have your Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute injury report coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Oh, the seminal fans, Tony. What is the expression? I believe some of the kids refer to it as being butt hurt.
They are going be miserable for the next 4 months.
My goodness.
It's only the beginning, Noel Nation.
Russ Landy, by the way, I mean, he has no dog in the fight here.
No.
Look, in the Montreal, in the Canadian Football League, you're not getting Jameis Winston, Blake Bortles, or any of those guys. He doesn't have an agenda with this. It's his opinion. I was surprised how strong he was that Blake Bortles is clearly the better prospect. than Mariota and Winston in his eyes.
Right, how he felt about Blake last year.
Right, and he said it was his play this year. He thought the way he handled everything thrown at him and was unflappable.
Right.
He thinks he's got such a huge future that this year, when you look at this year, we're sitting, we're like, were we satisfied? No. I was satisfied with the first few games when he's slinging it all over the yard and then, you know, didn't give you that production. For him to watch what happened this year on a 3-13 team and have that impress him, that is the piece of evidence that pushed him over the top saying, wow, this guy, in his opinion, is clearly the best. More, plenty of food for thought for tomorrow's program.
No doubt.
Right there. Let's welcome in Dr. Stephen Lucy on the Garber Auto Mall hot seat. Dr. Lucy, one of 31 physicians at Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, exclusive sports medicine providers of your Jacksonville Jaguars. JOI is Jacksonville's Orthopedic Institute. Happy New Year, Doc. How are you?
I'm doing great. Happy New Year to you guys. And let's hope for a good and prosperous 2015, particularly here at EverBank Field.
Absolutely. Let's hope that not a single player on staff has in need of the services of Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute or on the roster next year. But as we know, heading into the off season, terrible timing anytime, but Derek Marks tears the ACL. From what you understand, I guess he'll have it operated on next week. You want to let that calm down. You've educated us on that. You want to make sure there's no swelling in there, right? First of all.
Right. You know, you never want to tear your ACL, but you're right. If you had to tear it, you're better to tear it in training camp at the start of the year because it just gives you more time. But once you do it, even with these pros, as well with our regular athletes, we want to let it settle down. You don't want to add insult to injury. About the time the knee is quieting down and the player is thinking, you know, this isn't so bad. I can walk around. I can move and I can do. That's about the time to go ahead and do the surgery, which is usually somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 weeks. But I've seen it stretch out as long as 6 or 8 weeks, even in professional athletes, so their knee quiets down.
So let's assume that everything goes according to plan. So Derek Marks has a surgery, say, within a week from now. Timeline, prognosis, when can the Jags expect to send Derek Marks to be ready to be on the practice field, to be back to what you would consider full strength typically?
Well, you know, it's a long road back. And, you know, typical benchmarks are running about 4 months, agility cutting at 6 months. And then for these professional athletes, they actually take a little longer than our high school athletes. They're bigger. They have to perform at a higher level. So somewhere between 6 and 9 months, you know, is when you can expect them to start being able to perform. And they'll go slow in camp. You know, they're not going to do 2-a-days with a guy coming off an ACL. They're going to protect him a little. But with everything progressing, we would hope he'd be ready to go next year back to normal.
And in a case of a guy like Roy Miller, when you get the meniscus scoped, I mean, that's something that by, I guess, the first mini camp, he should be good to go, right?
Well, you know, we talked about this with the girls when you guys were off right before Christmas, but you can either resect a meniscus with a scope or you can repair it. Roy's was repaired, which is better over the long term, but it is a little slower. So that rehab isn't quite as slow as an ACL, but much slower than just trimming it back. So I would expect for him to be every bit of 4 months till he starts running. And so I think he's going to be on a similar track to Derek, that he'll be back for training camp. But I wouldn't look for him at some of the OTAs and earlier stuff. I think he'll still be rehabbing for that.
Good to know. New Year's resolutions for you, anything?
You know, stay healthy.
Keep wearing those sharp suits that you're always putting us to shame with every time you show up in here. Happy New Year, Doc. Good to see you.
Thank you.
All right, hang out for a minute. We'll talk here in a minute. We're going to wrap up in a moment. Dr. Stephen Lucy on the Garber Auto Mall hot seat again with Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, one of their 31 physicians, the exclusive sports medicine providers of your Jacksonville Jaguars. JOI is Jacksonville's Orthopedic Institute. Tony, today the fan feedback spotlight brought to you by Foundation Professionals of Florida. Just asking Jag fans where they think the most likely position is the Jags spend their first round pick. What kind of response do we get?
Here's what we got from at Irish Jaguar. I doubt you'll get many differing answers. Pass rusher being an end tackle or outside linebacker, which you quickly pointed out you gave me three answers in one tweet, and they're all different. From Bryrock, we got to be pass rusher. I would be surprised if the Jaguars do not draft Leonard Williams. From Eric, today, defensive end, but we all know that may change. Would rather trade down and grab a safety from Paolo, defensive line, unless we get JPP and Sue in free agency. From Nick, best player available, which means defensive end Leonard Williams, hashtag D-line, hashtag dominance, hashtag future MVP. And from Big BP, I understand Leonard Williams is a beast. However, Jags are so inept on offense, this team needs playmakers. Hashtag draft Amari.
We do need some playmakers. Russ Landy would tell you to run from drafting Amari third overall, right? I mean, that was, and look, you look at Doriel Green Beckham, he is a physical monstrosity.
He is.
On the lines of, Demaryius Thomas, Calvin Johnson, Dez Bryant type. The question is he going to be, you know, an issue for you? I honestly don't know all the things that got him. He kicked out of Missouri. He went to a couple other schools where he never suited up, I believe. He transferred right to Oklahoma. I think I'm getting confused with Deron Carter. He was at Missouri, right? Green Beckham signed there. He was a top prospect in high school coming out. And I think played his freshman year. I forget what it is that got him on the outs in Missouri. But it's interesting, just from a talent standpoint, that he thinks he's so far ahead of the class. And that while Amari Cooper's good, couldn't compare to the top three guys that went in last year's draft. And it was an unprecedented year in terms of rookie success at the wide receiver position.
Right.
And that doesn't even include Brandon Cooks and Kelvin Benjamin. I mean, the first round was so good last year at that spot. Oh, Russ Landy, a lot to chew on. If you missed it, go to 1010XL.com/on-demand. It'll be up there.
Pot?
Was it pot? It may have been.
I think it was.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, it was pot twice, actually.
Pot twice?
2012 and 2014.
Yeah, he was at Oklahoma this year but didn't play, and now he's declared for the draft.
We've seen plenty of GMs overlook the marijuana issue. We've seen plenty of guys slide because of the marijuana issue at times as well. And who knows? If Doriel Green Beckham gets his act together, could turn out to be one of the steals of the draft. Would have loved to ask him about Devontae Parker and several other guys, but we only had so much time.
Only 4 months to go.
Only four, right. Well, it won't be the last time we hear from Russ Landy. We appreciate him stopping by today. As all guests of Jaguars Today appear on the Garber Auto Mall hotline. Thanks to Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor, and, of course, Foundation Professionals of Florida, bringing you the fan feedback spotlight today for Fat Tony and Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, for Lauren Brooks. I told Doc a minute ago we killed her and buried her in a shallow grave. That was a lie, Doc. Just so you know, Dr. Lucy, don't think we murdered Lauren. I love you, Lauren. We love you. If you're listening right now, Lauren's like, they killed me? What happened? No, she's absolutely fine. XL Primetime's coming up next, so we'll hand off to those guys. I'm sure there'll be some discussion of Jameis Winston's dad coming out and apparently telling an ESPN reporter that he, in fact, will declare for the draft. I don't think a shock to anybody, but apparent confirmation, at least, coming from inside the family. So for all the aforementioned, I'm Mike Dempsey. That does it for Jaguars Today. Back at it again tomorrow right here from 10 to noon on 1010XL 92.5 FM.